Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sah Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastama Vishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaurya Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Bottom of 30. Vijay, how many kinds of Namabhas are there? Raghunath Das Babaji. The Srimad Bhagavatam 6.2.14 states, one who chants Hari Nam in any manner is immediately freed from the reactions of unlimited sins, even if he chants Sanketa indirectly, indicating something else, Parihasa jokingly, Stoba antagonistically, or even Hela disrespectfully or neglectfully. This is accepted by all the learned scholars of the scriptures. So it means we'll get into details of what each one. Yeah, okay. So, in other words, the idea is the holy name is so powerful that it doesn't matter what the situation is, you get benefit from the chanting. Right? Does that make sense? So that's an important thing to know, because we're so accustomed to pious activities that unless the activity is good, unless it's done right, you don't get a good result, right? Because that's how karma functions. And because we want good results, because good results means we can enjoy the material world, therefore, we look at everything like that. So religion is the source of artha, right? From artha, dharma comes artha. So then the idea is that if we do it right, we get the result. So generally speaking, the tendency will be, one who chants Hari Nam, if it didn't say in any matter, if it said one who chants Hari Nam is immediately freed from the reactions of unlimited sins, right? We would say yes if it's Shuddha Nam. Hmm. That would be our immediate reaction, because it has to be right, it has to be good. Right? But here, the holy name is in a different category, he's independent. So he doesn't work like normal religion. Right? That's for within the material world. Right? Is that if you're in contact with the holy name, it doesn't matter what the situation, you get benefit. Right? Does that make sense? This is what's special about the holy name. This is why the Mayavadis can't accept this, because other verses will say, just by one, you get liberated. You know, so getting rid of unlimited sins, that's just talking the karma side. But on the other side, he even gets rid of, one gets liberated. And they'll say, no, it can't be. You don't have the knowledge, how can you be liberated? Or the karma is not being performed properly, how you would get. But that's the holy name. He's transcendental. That's why it works so nicely, because in Kali Yuga, karma and jnana is not even at its pinnacle, right? In other ages, you have, high-grade karma and jnana. This age, even that's pretty small time. But the holy name works, so that's the benefit. Those persons who have insufficient knowledge about the principles of Harinam Tattva and Sambandhijnana chant Namabhas, of which there are four types, Sanketa, Parihasa, Stoba, and Hela. Right? So insufficient knowledge in Harinam Tattva and in Sambandhijnana. So it means the nature of the name and the nature of who's God, who's a living entity, and what's the material energy. You know, what's the relationship. If they're weak in that, then you'll be chanting Namabhas. Right? But the point is Namabhas is already so beneficial. Right? As I said before, if you continue to chant Namabhas, trying to avoid offense, and then it will come to Shuddha Nam. So it's not a problem, but it should be understood where one is. Otherwise, one will take it too easily. Oh, no, I'm already advanced, when one's not. right? Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's just pointed out. But even if it's not advanced, if you continue at it, you'll become advanced. Vijaya. Gurudev, kindly elaborate upon Sanketa Namabhas, right, the first one. So Sanketa is indirectly. Raghunath Das, Babaji. At the moment of his death, Ajamil called out for his son named Narayana. Narayana is another name of Krishna, the Supreme Lord. Hence, Ajamil was awarded the result of Sanketa, unintentional chanting of Krishna Nam. Right? This is why, means the sixth chapter is talking about all kinds of, sixth canto, all kinds of wonderful things. So one of the major stories in the sixth chapter is Ajamil. Now, one of the other points that it's making in the sixth chapter is that, what's the elephant bath stuff? Prayaschitta. It doesn't have any effect. It just makes mundaners feel good. That's all. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, within his showing is in Ajamil, he's just chanting the holy name. What do you call it? Indirectly. He's not even calling out the Lord's name. He's calling out his son's name, but his son happened to be named after Narayan. And he's freed from being controlled by the Yamadutas. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
He's chanting indirectly, but he chants the direct name. He chants the priest.
Yes, the direct name, but his intention was indirect. Just like we're dealing with the material energy, it's just dead matter. So anything about it that works means in that any action, any transformation, any attractiveness we have to it, any attachment we have for it, is actually all directed at Krishna. But we think it's the material energy. Right, just like the living entities in the body, because the living entities in the body, therefore, the body becomes attractive. But we think it's the body that's attractive; it's the living entity in the body. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So everybody, in any case, is already conscious of Krishna and attracted and attached to Krishna, but they don't know that, so it's indirect. You don't get the benefit there. It's indirect, but this is dealing with the holy name. Right, so that even that indirectness, you get benefit. On the other things, the indirect, only if you connect it do you get benefit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? My house is a house. If I say this is Krishna's house, now it is. But if I don't think it's Krishna's house, it isn't. Even though technically Krishna is everything, it's all his energy, so it does belong to him. So it's just whether you're recognizing who it belongs to. You know, just like in the house, everything belongs to the parents. But it's there for the child to use. So now if the child recognizes the parent's ownership of it and his therefore needing to deal properly with it, everything goes fine. Right? You know, does that make sense? But when he takes, you know, his mom's vases off the table and sets them up at one end of the living room as goals for a soccer game with his friend, then there's a problem. Does that make sense? So even in here is that you have the indirect, that if you consciously connect it, it's connected. But that's what's so special about the holy name. Even if you don't consciously connect it, it still is connected. That's what's special about the holy name. Right? Is that something? Yes.
Prasad is the same.
Prasad is direct, means the name, Prasad, the deity, the Dham. The Vaishnavas, you know or don't. Like, there's some people, they just like to hang out with Prabhupada. He's just a nice guy. They like him. You know? Like that, what do you call it? You know, the wino? What do you call him?
Ginsburg?
No, not. I guess if that's what first comes to your mind when you say wino, then, you know, he was a wino. Those bums that were out on the Bowery. Let's say Bowery bum, that came in during one of Prabhupada's class and came in and brought some toilet paper and put it in there and, you know, being respectful and, you know, probably tipped his hat and then, you know, went out like that. So then, all he knows is Prabhupada's a nice guy. He doesn't know he's spiritual, all these different things like that. So he has no, but he gets benefit. Does that make sense? That's what Krishna is mentioning in that fourth verse of the Chaturshloki, that you should be looking for Krishna in everything, directly and indirectly. Because the directly means that's what actually, the things that he's directly in. Indirectly means where his energies are there, But he and his energies are non-different. So you remember him, he'll manifest. In other words, in the column here, you're only dealing with the feminine energies. It means within the energies they're dealing, they themselves are dealing between masculine and feminine. But you're only dealing with energy. But if you recognize that the potency behind that energy is Krishna, then Krishna's there. Does that make sense? That's the thing about the indirect. But in the direct elements, it's not like that. He's there whether you recognize him or not. So that's why, you know, even the ducks, they don't know this is, you know, it's not like that, you know, they go out into, what was that park in London? Hyde Park, yeah. And going out, is Hyde the one you can go and stand on the box and pontificate? Same one, okay. So in Hyde Park and they're distributing prasad, right, and the ducks are coming over and eating. It's not that they go, hey, prasad, you know, like this, you know, like that, and it's like that. And so it's like that. It's not happening like that. But just from that, they're getting human birth next life, right? And they have the bhakti sukriti. So the human birth, but they'll have the bhakti sukriti to therefore come in contact with the devotees again. Right? So it's you have both aspects.
So they ducktailed their activities.
Yes, they ducktailed, they perfectly ducktailed their activities in the service of the Lord, yes. The Muslims use the word harama to describe pork, which is a forbidden food in their religion. It also means something very dirty. This has two syllables, ha and rama. Rama is the name of the Lord. Hence, each time they utter harama, they chant Sanketanama Bas, which ultimately saves them from the torture chambers of Yamaraj. Right? So all these things are worked in, you see, as they're around. So how much benefit? See, the thing is, we're just thinking, we're just this, you know, little merry band of men, right? You know, like this. But it's actually the whole universe is going on properly because of devotional service. All the demigods, all 33 million, they're all neophyte devotees. Right? It means if they were more serious, they'd be born in devotee families. They're less serious, they're born in, as demigods. Right? So these kind of means that, so everything that's happening is happening connected to devotional service. Because we think, oh, we're doing devotional service, then there's the material world. But the material world is simply Krishna's energy. It's working under his direction. So how much is going on? In the sixth canto also, it mentions that those who are born in noble or aristocratic families have all done devotional service in their last life. Right? We think it's just, oh, you know, they're like that because they did the good karma. But the point is good karma is not necessarily enough. They had to do devotional service because the demons also, they're rich, they're wealthy, they're doing everything nice, they're following Varnashram, but why aren't they born in that kind of situation? You understand? So generally, some devotional service is there. Now, if you find one that's nasty, that's called a Naradhama. Does that make sense? So most what's going on in the world means everything that's going on in the world is connected with the Lord and has some direct or indirect connection with devotional service. So we're taking part of a much greater mission, but we're thinking we're the odd ones. No, we're the normal ones, the ones that aren't doing this, right? All 14 planetary systems like that, they all follow the Vedic culture. Like that. Only on this planet, and this planetary system has 9 islands. All, other than this one, all 8, all follow. On this one, then you have, mostly they follow in the other ages, but in this age, then a portion doesn't like to follow. So who's in the majority? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So this is the whole point, is that the perception has to be, we're trying to expand the perception to understand is that actually it's the holy name, devotional service, this is the prominent element. But we're so used to some alternative kind of thing. You know, like that. All scriptures unanimously state that Namabas chanting awards mukti. Right? So that's just there. The sound, vibration, and letters in Harinam are inseparably linked with Sri Mukunda, the bestower of mukti. Thus, by the mere utterance of Harinam, the chanter is brought into contact with Sri Mukunda. Mukti, through Brahmagya, is obtained after long endeavor. But the same is easily achieved through Namabas chanting. Right? So here it's that they don't know they're getting it. But if you specifically chant to get liberation, then it turns into Pratibimba. Right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Right. Basically, if they're a non-devotee, you're even getting this benefit of Pratibimba. Right? And then if it's chanted, you know, you're hearing from the devotees and stuff like that, then it works nice. So you get even more benefit. Vijaya.
How are they distinguishing between chanting one name and becoming free from sinful reaction and chanting to get liberation? If you chant one name, we're liberated. It's the same thing, or distinguish differently?
No, it means the name does both. It frees from sins and it gives liberation. What we're discussing, referring to, is in a previous discussion here. They were talking about Pratibimba and Chaya Namabhas. So Pratibimba is where the person is basically non-devotional. Right? So we can see here is even Pratibimba, it awards one this, because it's not even making a distinction here between Pratibimba and Chaya.
So how is he differentiating freedom from sinful reaction and liberation?
He's not. It's just that they're two different verses mention these things. So this one he specifically mentioned because this one, the Bhagavatam verse, mentions the four kinds of Namabhas. Right? But it doesn't specifically say here about liberation. Other verses mention about liberation, like Haridas Thakur, he was mentioning that verse, and that's then why Gopal Chapala got upset. Because saying, by Brahma Gyan, then there's so much endeavor, so much work, but simply by chanting the holy name, one gets liberation. Right? So what I was just doing was making the distinction between the innocent person is chanting the holy name, but not thinking about liberation. So he'll be getting more benefit than he's doing it to try to get liberation. Right? Because the one is he's chanting God's name, he's directly in contact with God. He doesn't really know that, but he's also not working for something less. Right? But while the Mayavadi, he knows that by chanting, I'll get liberation. So, but you could also get love of God. So he's opted for that. So then, therefore, it drops it into a lower state. But still, you get the benefit. You get liberation. You get freed from sin. Like that. The point is that anybody is benefited by chanting the holy name. Now, the point is you won't get love of God unless it's heard in line of the parampara. Because here we say it's not that, it didn't say that the Muslim who heard Rama from the parampara, then whenever he chants Harama, then no, they're getting benefit anyway. Right? You know, there's so many holy names worked into it. Because it even will mention, I'm not sure it'll come up here, is that even the word is broken. You have one syllable, there's other syllables in between, and then another, you still get the benefit of chanting the holy name. You know? In other words, despite ourselves, Krishna's, you know, made so many arrangements that we can get association of the name.
So what about once, we were talking, I think, last week, when you know the offenses, then you can chant offensively because now you know what they are, and when you don't know, you can.
Yeah, you can be more. But still, you'll get benefit.
So
but
I go up to the Muslim and say, no, you got to chant this way. And then when he says haram, then it's not, now it's namaparad. Because now he knows.
I'm not sure what's the significance.
That
you know what I'm saying? Because we're not going to go up to the Muslim and say that.
We're preaching. Janare Krishna, these are the offenses. And so it's like it sounds like saying, well, if I didn't tell you.
Because we generally don't start with the offenses on an opening program. Generally, discussing the offenses are for discussing with devotees. You know, in an open program, you're just trying to establish some bandhagyan of who God is, who we are, and what's the nature of the material world, and why, therefore, we're suffering. And only by taking up spiritual life, then we'll become freed from that. And the significant method in this age is chanting the holy name. That's as far as, we're not giving any detail of the holy name. So mentioning that by chanting the holy name, that you'll get you know, the benefit, that's not a problem. Or chanting, that's not the benefit. You don't give so much detail, because then they'll start to get upset. Or, you know, misuse.
But let's say hypothetically someone asks a question about the demigods and you say, no.
But the thing is who would ask about demigods?
Indians.
Okay.
So you're talking to Indians, you say, no, Krishna is the supreme demigods. And then Now they know. Now is that offensive if they're chanting because now they know it's...
No, but you've explained it to them. Now they have their choice. They asked, so that...
So now they're in trouble.
It depends whether they how they chant, why they take it after that. You know what I'm saying? In other words, we should not be looking for ways to either, you know, avoid, you know, just the standard practice like that. So in other words, if we see the acharyas are mentioning these things in those situations, then that's what one would do, because you're dealing with an individual human who it's their business to make a choice for themselves. But we don't, in other words, you don't give information that's unnecessary. You know. Does that make sense?
That kind of defeats the whole Christian program, because Christian philosophy, as soon as you know Jesus is your Savior, now if you don't accept Him, you go to hell. But before that, you were okay.
That's just because they like the extreme. You know, it's either so sentimental or totally, you know, absolutism. You know, it's like, it's that they can't balance. That's always been a problem. That's been, you could say traditionally their problem. Like that. And anybody who was balanced, then they had a problem. Like that. You know, so it's just, that's just there. That's the meaning of the, one of the mundane. But two, generally the neophyte, it's just everything's so extreme, they can't differentiate. That's the quality of the mud. One of the qualities of the Madhyam is that he can differentiate. The intelligence is developed because it's not clouded by anartas. Doesn't mean that something's not there, but it's not clouded by it. You understand what's the standard, but then you may have some other elements, so you can still work with it. But the neophyte tends to... their perception is clouded by their anartas. So, does that make sense? So the tendency, therefore, is everything is it's clouded, so therefore it's either too simple or too strict. Like that. You know, so Niyamagraha is pretty standard. But it's always like that. Because the point is if just accepting Jesus, you've heard about Jesus, now accept Jesus, that now you're saved, that means every variety of Christian should be saved. But they don't necessarily think like that. You know, it's like, you know, they're sitting down there with their guitars and you say, okay, yeah, I think I'll go become, you know, an East Orthodox. You know, or go become a Catholic, or, you know, they may not appreciate that. No, you have to sit down with them and get out your guitar. You know. They must do well in Mexico.
According to this description, can we say that as a practicing devotee, minimum we getting liberated? Is that will be correct?
Yeah. But I'm saying minimum you get that, but is that what one wants?
Because it mentioned that so many people came to the movement just for liberation. That's what they are looking for. They don't look for prema.
They can get that, but generally by association they understand that there's something more than that. I mean, it's like even devotees who talk that they're so worried about, you know, the material nature, it's so burdensome and, you know, this and that, when will we be freed from that, is they know that Krishna is the goal. So very rare do you find someone who they are just committed to, you know, liberation. They're not actually interested, like I mentioned before. I've never met one. I've only met one devotee who he was practicing devotional service simply to get to the heavenly planets. Like that.
Indian?
Huh? Indian, yeah. Like that. Strict brahmachari. Like that, because, you know, he knew he had to follow all the things, but he just knew that, you know, he wasn't going to be able to perform all the yajnas and all that to get there, but if he chanted, he could get there. So in that way, they're more intelligent. They're giving that credit to the holy name that he's more powerful than all the karmakanda stuff. But he was very nice, very humble, and all that means he was older than most all the devotees at that time. He may have been in his 40s or 50s, while everybody else was like in their 20s. But he just, all he'd do as a service was be a gopher. You know, he needed anything, he'd go out and get it, purchasing, running around. You know, one of the more difficult services, because, you know, it's so difficult, you know, getting to places, the transport, then picking stuff up, then getting it back, you know, dealing with all the business, you know, but he would do that. So you have these 20-year-olds telling him what to do. And it didn't bother him, even though he had been around longer than, he was older than anyone, had been a devotee for longer than anyone. I think at that time he'd been a devotee like 20, 30 years. You know, and you have these 2-3-year-old devotees telling him what to do. It wasn't a problem for him, because, you know, he had his goal. He was fixed. He was focused.
Futama Karmakanda.
Yes. Vijaya, dear master, we have already read in many places of the scriptures that arrogant, empirical philosophers seeking mukti, the ignorant people, base meat-eating, barbarian malechas, and atheistic or demoniac-minded persons uninterested in spiritual goals have all attained moksha simply by chanting Sri Krishna Nama in Parihasa, that is, jokingly, the second kind of Nama Bas. Gurudev, what is the third kind, Stoba Nama Bas? So he's already just gone through that one. That was very... well done, right? So here, because there might be a question, but here he's made it very clear, right? So arrogant, empirical philosophers, right? Not just philosophers, arrogant ones, empiricals, completely on the sensual plan, just whatever they can see, that's all, right? That makes sense. You know, that may even include the wheelchair man, right?
Yeah.
The ignorant people, right? Not just people in general, but the ignorant people. Base meat eating, right? Not sophisticated meat eating like that. We're not talking about a, you know, 3-star, you know, something like that. Barbarian malechas. So that means even the sophisticated malechas, they'll get some benefit, right? Atheistic or demoniac minded people. So uninterested in spiritual goals, right? So that means there's nothing good and nothing connected, but they still get liberation.
So, in which sense we can understand they get liberation? I mean, after chanting some name, they still have so much desire, material desires, and so much contamination. Why we say they are liberated?
Why not? If I said door of no door, you would be a bit more happy.
I mean, there's some definition for liberation.
Definition means one's freed from the material entanglement.
Yes, I mean,
but he has desire. Don't worry, he'll be back. No, if you're really worried, how? Why him? Why not me? He'll be back. He'll be back. Don't worry. You know, it's just like, you know, you're sitting there, your friend, and, you know, you and your friend there, and he wins the lottery, right? He gets $1 million. And you're thinking, why him, right? Why not me? But, you know, 1 year later, he's more poor than you. And then you can sit back and go, yeah, okay, now everything, now the world, universal, you know, justice has been brought back into balance again. You understand? So they get liberated. The point is we're making, the question comes because we think liberation is special. Liberation's not special. You understand? We're taking it that liberation is special. Liberation is not special.
Usually we mean liberation is a permanent state situation.
When we say liberation, we mean going back to Godhead and being established in your eternal relationship with the Lord. That's permanent. But if you just get liberated and go to the Brahma Jyoti, that's never permanent. No one stays there forever. That's always temporary. We'll always fall down from there. That makes sense? Yes? No? The guy is sitting there, right? He's meditating. He goes beyond even what his gurus taught him, right? He comes to that unlimited Brahman. But instead of being happy, like they talk about Brahmananda, he finds sadness because there's nothing there. It's empty. So what does he do? He comes off his mountain, goes, looks for his girlfriend. No? giving a Chinese example here. You understand? There's nothing there. It's boring. So one always comes back. That's why Maya lets you go. She knows you'll be back. You know? It's like this. You know, she says, another guy says, I'm out of here. I can't stand this anymore. And then she opens it. Okay, go ahead. And he goes out there, and there's nothing out there. It's just this, you know, emptiness, complete, just a bright, you know, just brightness. How long is he going to stay out there before he comes walking back in?
I like the, some of them, they can, I mean, they can do some selfless service for people, you know.
But why do you have to, you don't have to be liberated to do that. Old grandmothers do that. You know what I'm saying? Little girls do that. You know? Does that make sense? You know, the NGOs do that. There's plenty of people that do that. You don't have to go through all that trouble. You know? Go down, sign up for the, what do you call it? What's that, those guys? They go around the world. Yeah, those ones are the one before, a long time before the original one.
UNICEF,
all those guys. They all have that. You go sign up, they'll teach you how to deal and do all the stuff. They'll send you to some way out of the way place. And then you can do welfare work. Right? You can go down to the local soup kitchen and give out soup, you know? It's like, that's easy. You don't have to take up self-realization to do welfare work. They come back to that because there's nothing there. That's why they come back. Now, oh, but they're doing, that's because they've come dropped from their position.
This is to do these things in a higher consciousness.
Higher? How is it higher?
Means
higher than what?
Like a
higher than like a slug or?
Consciousness of like Sunyavada or something like
that. Sunyavada, but that's just nothingness. Why is that elevated?
There's no attachment to material.
But no attachment to spiritual, but the soul is spiritual, so how is that an improvement? You understand? Comparing it to gross materialism, it's better because there is that sense of selfless this and that. But compared to bhakti, it's actually a lower position. Because why means if you want to serve Krishna, right? You're going to do you're going to engage the senses in an activity that gives a result. And that result's going to be for Krishna. Okay? So I'm engaged in activity. But the Shunyavad doesn't do any activity. I'm getting a result. They don't worry about results. I'm giving it to Krishna. They don't give anything to anybody. Right? I'm engaging the senses. They don't use the senses. You understand? That's why it's a lower position. Because by the consciousness it's a little bit higher, but by their activities they're actually in a lower position. Because they don't have, there's no interaction, this and that. So how will they appreciate the spiritual world? Because it's all about interaction. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Does the
little loud?
Does the liberation go against the free will of the?
No, it's your choice. Because it's by choice you get liberated, and by choice you come back.
No, but a person, they're not aspiring for liberation; they just happen to chant the whole thing.
But liberation, you get free from all the sins, so the life gets better. So everybody likes that. You know what I'm saying? You can't fault the holy name because he is who he is. You know, that he's obstructing your free will to be a, you know, how you say, a living entity that's suffering like anything in the material world. So to free us from that suffering, that's against our free will.
But let's say in the case of a demon, he might like being a demon and doing devilish activities.
But he likes being a pious demon. Real demons are pious. You know what I'm saying? You know, Bali Maharaj is doing a yajna, you know, a Vedic yajna. And when Vamanadeva comes, because he's a Brahmin, he's respecting him, giving him charity. You know, what demons you find nowadays that do that? Because they know only by being pious so you get all the facility. like that. So they don't have a problem with these things. You know what I'm saying? Low-class demons, and that's another thing. They don't know because they're in ignorance. So in ignorance is always going to be a problem. So if you're freed from ignorance, that's a blessing. Yes.
So I understand what he's getting at. We have pious and we have impious credits in our account. Won't liberation wipe out all the pious credits as well, so we can't enjoy it to that degree?
But the point is the enjoyment on the platform of liberation is like an ocean compared to a drop of whatever is the material happiness you can get. You know, I'm saying Lord Brahma is as good as it gets. And that's like a drop compared to an ocean. Right? So on the mundane platform, because the discussion is on the mundane platform, then there's so much more benefited. You know? The guy's living there in the slum, has no money, doesn't know the creditors are coming banging on his door, he's about to get thrown out of his already living in a, what do you call those little home things? You know, the trailer, he lives in a trailer park like that. He's about to get evicted from that, even though he owns it, but he owes credit so much, they're going to take it from him, and all that. And then somebody comes along and says, hey, you won the lottery, here's $1 million. This is a problem. You freed him from all these different things. Oh, no, this is against my free will. I wanted to suffer in this life. You know, so it's not going to happen. Yes.
Can Mayavadi attain liberation through chanting, because he's chanting?
Of course, that's what it says.
But he's chanting on Namaparada stage.
That's what I'm saying. All you get is liberation. See, is the problem here is we're thinking all these questions are based on liberation is something special, or my independence is something special. But both from the mundane platform. Even the independence is not my independence to be engaged in the Lord's service. That's the natural form, because in serving the Lord, I have my independence, how and when and all these different things. So we're not dovetailing it. These are questions that are, is my position as supreme, absolute controller and enjoyer of the material world being disturbed by the holy name getting in the way of that? That's the basis of all the questions over the last 10 minutes. You know what I'm saying? Because this idea that this Purusha Bhav, I'm the controller and enjoyer, is so important, that is this having an effect on that? But that's why people come back, because they still have that. It's one who devotee gives that up. That's why he goes to the spiritual world. You can't get in the spiritual world with Purusha Bhav. Right? Let's say you can't get to prema with it.
Is there some of that mentality in Vaikuntha?
In Vaikuntha, no. In the Balma Lila, then there won't be any of the gross, but the subtle that I'm advanced or I'm a guru of devotees, that can still remain. That's what it means by that fragrance. You know? You're liberated, so there is no material body, there is no subtle body, but the fragrance of having been in the material world is still there. Mm-hmm. So that means I can still smell it. Hey, it's been in the material world. Let's go around.
I love the smell of material contamination.
Is that okay?
I thought there was a trace of something in Vaikuntha.
No, there's no trace. It's prema, so there's no trace. All it is that prema is on the level of that they're getting some particular benefit, but it's a spiritual benefit. You know, the benefit of being on the same planet as the Lord, so you can serve Him there, being an associate so you can serve Him in that way, having the same form, so therefore that's a nice to interact. You know, the more similar, it's a little bit more intimate. Like that. Same opulences, then you have all kinds of facilities to use for the Lord. So it's just that they have some ideas. So it's not material. It's purely spiritual. It's spiritual desire. But pure unalloyed means you don't even have those. It's just simply Krishna's pleasure. So the external is not important. Well, in Vaikuntha, because they work within rules, it's important. Right? They work it in all the functions of all the rules. That's how they express their devotion, is through rules. So therefore, then also these other considerations aren't incongruous to their way of thinking. But in Braja, it's only on the mood, so therefore these aren't important. They're already there automatically, but they don't worry about them at all. Does that make sense? Okay, what is the third kind? Stoba Namabhas, which is antagonistically. Okay, so we've done Parihasta jokingly. Antagonistically. Raghunath Das Babaji. When a Vaishnav chants Sri Krishna Nam and another person tries to antagonistically hinder him by disrespectfully mocking him, his mimicry is known as Stoba Namabhas. An example of Stoba Namabhas is when an agnostic person mimics the chanting of a Vaishnava and derides him, saying, "How absurd do you think that your Hari Kesho will take care of everything?" The sound vibrations in Hari Nam possess such immense potency that even a disrespectful and atheistic person can attain mukti by Stoba Namabhas. Right? So people do that. They deride all these different things, but they still get benefit. Yes.
Why is that?
Because they're connected with Krishna.
I'm just wondering why the benefit is there when someone's intention is so.
Because they're still connected with Krishna. You know, the point is, in other words, one has to give up the idea that the material world has some intrinsic value on its own. It's because we think that doing good here actually brings real good. If I do good in the world, I bring good to the world. But it's an illusion. You know what I'm saying? You have a dream and somebody does good, then what benefit comes? You know what I'm saying? You have a bunch of characters. You know, means they're just numbers, right? And they raise their hands and move around on the screen, right? And so if they do something good on the screen, does the other group of numbers on the screen think something's good's been done? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Never. It's like that. We who are watching it think good has been done. But the actual characters don't. They don't care. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. They just don't care. We think. So the same way as we're not involved, the material nature itself couldn't care less. We project our consciousness onto it and identify with it and therefore say there's good in this world. But the only good in the world is God, the living entities, and Maya herself as servant of Krishna. That's the only thing that's good. And now if you can engage Maya in Krishna's service, then that's nice. But if you're not, it's just so many numbers. That's all it is. It's an illusion. It's not actually real. It means it's there. This rock is here. But that I say this is a good rock or a bad rock or, you know, anything like that, that's not real. It's just a rock. I say it's a good rock. Someone else, no, that's not a good rock. I'll say, this is a rock. So that's not a rock. I'll show you rocks. You know, they're as big as this room. Now that's a rock. Like, this is sand. Where I come from, this is sand. Where is it? Back in Texas, this is sand.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's
nothing to do with any of that. Point is if you want love of God, then it has to be conscious of God, favorable towards God, and free from karma and jnana. That's then Shuddhanam. And that gives Shuddha Bhakti. But if it's not Shuddhanam, then all the benefits of the material world, you know, of karma and jnana, you get. That's just on the side. You know, it's just like when you go there and buy something at the, you know, at a food shop, you get a napkin along with it. It's not a big deal. Does that make sense? You know, we're talking about the food and the discussion is about the napkin. Do we get a napkin? What kind of napkin is it? So what is it? Cute ones, little thing around the corner. It's like, how did they fold it? You know, like that. If you fold it like that, that's a good napkin. If you pay it like that, that's not so good. Right? You know, fold it so it's, you know, the diamond shape, that's better. You know, it's just the square, that's not so good. You understand? We're talking about lunch, but the discussion always gets distracted into the napkin. Does that make sense? So, in other words, arrangements are important because you can't express the masculine principle except through the feminine arrangements, right? I mean, it's through energy that you're able to understand the principle of Krishna, right? But the point is it's still, when you're talking about the reflection of real, in other words, because Krishna's interacting with his internal potency. When his internal potency reflects as the external potency, then it's still Krishna's potency that's making the reflection work. But the amount of interaction that's going on in the reflection is not a whole lot. So the principle that the environment and the arrangements are important is correct. But that we think that the environment of the material world actually has a value compared to the spiritual, that's where the discussion becomes weak. Does that make sense? Right? So it's our need for that dependency. No, I've done this, but I did this, but why he gets that? Because we're thinking it's karma. He didn't do the karma for liberation. Why does he get it? You know what I'm saying? But the point is karma doesn't give bhakti. But karma, you know, gives these other things. So that's the point. Karma is not a big deal. You know, the devotee is so worried about becoming, you know, good and all that, nice arrangements and good facility. But it's never enough. Have you ever, none of you probably would have seen. Then it means... Yeah, you've been to the boundary walls, right? Okay, now, take out all the stuff that's inside there, right? And put a wall back up with a window and a door. Or let's say, yeah, here, that'd be just say, seen the, like the Gauranga Kutirs and stuff like that? That was as good as it got back in the 70s where you stayed in Mayapur. That was it, that's it. You had a roof like that. I remember Gaur Purnima Festival, I was sleeping outside the bathroom on the third floor of the Lotus building. It was a construction site, so right next to my head was a pile of stones, you know, all the flooring and all that, and another pile of like stone chips. There was no floor, it was just the cement slab. That was where I stayed, right? So, you know, Gauranga Kutir is like, you know, that's high-end Grihastha stuff, right? No? Okay, but nowadays, and then you're thinking, oh, if it just had, you know, it wasn't a tin roof, or there was a little bit, or a little more windows, or a little something, then it would be nice. Devotees now have these huge houses, verandas, you know, this, all kinds of nice things, heaters, ACs, never even, you were lucky if you had a fan. If you had a fan, you were doing good, right? And even if you had a fan, if the electricity was on so it worked, you were doing good. Right, so they have all these ACs, generators, this, that. You're cooking a gas. You have all these imported goods. You know, even Nimai's shop has stuff that before you couldn't get by going to specialty stores in Calcutta. Right? And still devotees, oh, it's not so nice. So that's the point, is that it never actually gets good. The material energy never gets good. You have the facilities that you define as good, but you never actually feel as good. It's never quite right. You know what I'm saying? You know, the teenage, you know, girl is thinking as she walks out of from her apartment on the top, the penthouse suite, right? That into the elevator of the apartment building that's in her house. And she gets into the elevator and goes to the back wall and then leans on it, right? Because she's got to text some stuff. And then she remembers, oh, I got to push the button. And she's thinking, wouldn't it be nice if I could just say it and then it goes? Why do I have to push the button? Right? But the lift goes straight to her house. Not even there, then you get out and your door's there. It opens into your house. And still it's a problem. Right? Other people, I mean, I remember, you know, in China, if it's taller than 7 floors, there's a lift. But if it's 7 floors, there's no lift. You walk up the stairs. Like 7 is normal, right? And I don't know why. The devotees always had programs on the 7th floor. Every program. It's always 7. No ground floor, no basement, no 7th floor. Got to be the 7th floor. Right? No?
Yes.
Yeah, it's always 7th floor. I don't know. Maybe up there no one can hear the kirtan. I don't know. It's what it is. You know? Or the devotees are successful, so they got the 7th floor. You know, I don't know what it is. It's always 7th floor.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Does the idea of good within the material illusion not at least remind us of like something in the heart, something in the unconsciousness of the soul? Does it not remind us of Krishna in the spiritual world?
It can, but it doesn't necessarily. I mean, there's so many people doing good in the world. Does it remind them of Krishna? So much poetry, so much writings. So many varieties of media talking about good, but do they remember Krishna? You know what I'm saying? A few more religious people that goes, by God's grace it all worked out. But most people, that's just a nicety, a pious nicety. See, we're talking here about Nama Bas, right? We're not talking about the element of the devotee's practice, how he's going to apply everything in his life to Krishna, because then you're already talking about a committed person with faith. You're talking about people that have no faith. Does that make sense? Because the problem comes is that we're trying to put in the good there, but isn't it Krishna? But then when we actually get to the technical points of Krishna consciousness, we'll do the opposite. We'll then throw it out into the material. We're just talking here just straight what it is, but they're getting this, but wouldn't that, in other words, you're trying to make it look better than it is. It's a euphemism. It's like ethnic cleansing. Well, isn't it nice they kind of cleaned up the neighborhood? Right? It is, right? It's clean. Right? No one around. It's very clean. Right? Quiet, peaceful, like that. Think of it this way. You don't have to worry about getting mugged. There's no one here, right? There's no problem for, the rent rates have dropped, gone right through the floor, there's plenty of housing, the opportunity is unlimited, right? All this is the benefits of this. So you can do that to anything. Hey, we're in public. Tell the kid to quit picking his nose. No, but think about all the exercise he gets and, the mind, the finger, skills that he's developing and all that, and the sensitivities on telling the difference between, his nose and what's not his nose. All these different kinds of things he's developing. His intelligence, the body, body-mind coordination, that's the thing, all these different things. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that you don't want to do it that way. You want to do it the other way. You know what I'm saying?
Is that to say, though, that there's nothing objective to the sattva guna? Because,
is there nothing objective? No, there's not. It's all, everything is subjective. It's all, Krishna is the subject, and it's all connected to him. We're the object. But the problem is we think we're the subject. So therefore, things could be objective. Right? That's why objectiveness is important, because I'm the subject. That's why the academics, it's all about being objective, because what the objectiveness is, what is my subjectiveness? How I see the world, that's objective. If you see different from that, it's subjective, because that's the way you think. But the way I think is objective, because I objectify everything. I'm the subject. Right? This is the level of that's underlying the thinking. Does that make sense? See, there's a specific point we're trying to get here, is the holy name is so special, it doesn't matter what is going on. You're getting benefit. But the benefit is simply what the materialist is working so hard to get, either liberation or heavenly pleasures. He's getting that just by chanting the holy name. And in all these ways that actually aren't very nice. In other words, he's working so hard to get something simply he can get by chanting. Right. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, but now, if that's what you get by that, what's the real benefit? That's just like, in other words, it should come out the question like the Chintamani stone that's in Sanatana Goswami's garbage. If he keeps this in the garbage, what does he value? So in other words, the holy name that gives prema, that's what's special. Right? Shuddha Nama is special. We're just talking Nama Bas here. But we generally tend to think, you know, Shuddha Nama is something way beyond, and Nama Bas, you know, that's standard. No, Shuddha Nama is standard. Nama Bas is less than standard. But the point is Nama Bas, the sincere neophyte, advances the Shuddha Nama. Right? And the materialist, he's getting all kinds of benefits. So in other words, there's everything is auspicious. Krishna, it says Krishna is all auspicious. That's what it means. Everything about him is auspicious. Does that work? Like that. Your point that you're making, that's valuable, but you apply that into the indirect activities of devotional service. Does that make sense? You know, like you go into your room and, you know, put, okay, my bead bag goes here and this goes here and that goes there, but it's not necessary that it has to go in that order. But it's just, you're trying to either, you know, it's practical, you're just putting it somewhere, or hopefully later you can remember that's where you put it, you know, or you're the kind of person who thinks, I'll always put it there so I know, always know it is, so everything has its place. So his mode of goodness is there. But the point is unless that's connected to Krishna, it's still just ordinary mode of goodness. You know, more to goodness in the material world is good. It's just no matter how you cut it, it's good. But the point is good's not good enough. It's got to be pure goodness. Then it has some meaning. So all you have to do is add Krishna, and it becomes pure goodness. Now we're saying here is that you're adding Krishna to goodness, it becomes pure goodness. You add it to passion, you still get benefit. You add it to ignorance, you still get benefit. But you don't. It doesn't give as good a benefit if it's pure goodness. And even in pure goodness, we'll make a distinction between pure goodness meaning simply the position of liberation and pure goodness meaning in devotional service. Because pure goodness, without devotional service, you get to Mahat. That's as far as you get. Mahatattva. Because that's Vishuddha Sattva. But then if it's with bhakti, then that's what's going on in the spiritual realm. That their existence is Vishuddha Sattva, and then within that existence they're doing devotion. While the others, they're in the existence of Vishuddha Sattva, but doing nothing. They're just existing. So for the devotee, existence is only important because it can be engaged in the Lord's service. Right? Because existence is what's around you. You're existing in this environment. So now, how to use this environment, Krishna's service, that's what's important. Right? But just existing there, no one does. You know, even if it's been out, you've been, let's say, been out, you know, doing some work or something, had to travel, this and that, it was really bad. Everything about it from beginning to end was tough. So then when you get home, you're just happy. Ah, home. You just sit out and just stick your feet out. Ah, yeah, nice. But how long do you do that? You do that for a few minutes, and then you go, okay, what's in the fridge? Right? You know, then, you know, so you have to do something. That's what I was saying before, is that you get to Brahman, you're going to say, wow, this is great. And then it goes, wow, what's going on? You know, so then you come back here.
But it's an ocean of bliss, so why wouldn't you be just satisfied blissing out?
Because the nature of the soul is unlimited bliss, not a drop. Because when you get into the realm of bliss, it's only a fraction of a portion of a drop. But that fraction of a portion of a drop is like an ocean compared to what's here. It's only an ocean compared to here. That's why when you talk about it here, it's an ocean. So when you get into it, you go, wow, this is great. But then you start to notice it's only a fraction of a portion of a drop. And that's then where then you come back here. For devotees, then they just move on. So therefore, they don't. That stage of liberation to them is inconsequential. It's like walking through a door. you don't stop at the threshold. Wow, this is a great door. Check it out. You know, like that, you know? You just walk from one room to the next. You know, but the you know, all these voidists and impersonalists, they're into the door. They want to stand there in the door frame and bask in the door frame. You know. Yes.
Is it possible to realize one's mistake from the Brahma Jyoti, progress further?
The demons do, can. Everybody else know. Because it's like this. The demons who were killed by Krishna, personally, they saw Krishna. Right? So they have that experience of Krishna. Now in their liberated state, there's no mundane conceptions of that. So now in the Brahman state, when they get bored, they can either remember the material world or remember Krishna. But on the liberated platform, then Krishna is going to be a much more fuller experience. So they can, therefore, move to Vaikuntha. They're not going to get to Golok by that method, but they're going to move, they can go to Vaikuntha. But your regular impersonalist, he doesn't. God has no form. He has no activities. There is nothing. So when he gets there and he gets bored, then the only place there is something is the material world. That's why those who are interested in liberation always come back. But those who are interested in devotional service never come back. So, okay.
We observe devotees around us. I cannot tell which devotee I did raise. Most of devotees, although they've been chanting many years,
does it matter?
So
because he's liberated, therefore he's good association, or because he has attraction to Krishna or taste in the holy name that he's worth associating with? You understand? Why is he worth associating with? Because he's liberated?
I mean, that maybe, you know.
No, I'm just saying, on this, make this distinction first. Then we'll get into other points. What's the important thing about a sadhu? Is he's liberated, or because he has affection for Krishna?
Affection for Krishna.
Okay, but you understand they're not on equal terms, these two? It's not liberation or, you know, love for Krishna. It's liberation or love for Krishna. Does that make sense? Does it make sense? Does it intellectually make sense? Yes, okay. Now, the holy name grants liberation. So one that all devotees are liberated. The problem is whether they know it or not. They still act as if they're not liberated because they're conditioned to being not liberated. So even though they're liberated, they still act as if they're not. But they're liberated.
How could be that if they are liberated, how can they not know that they are liberated?
Does a baby know how rich he is when he's born and his father has billions? Does the baby understand that? When does he understand it? All he knows is he got lots of money and so therefore he can strut around at school. That's all. Because what does he want? He's a teenager. He just wants an iPod, you know, or you know this. He's not even. What is it now? It used to be an Xbox. Now what is it? Something like that. You know, maybe a motorcycle. But how does that compare? It means everybody else has one, right? Even he has a Ducati. There's other guys that got Ducatis. You know, other guys that have Bugatti. It's nothing that he as a teenager can want that other people basically way below his status can't have. You know what I'm saying? So it's only when he matures and starts to become involved in the family business does he actually understand what $1 billion means. You understand? So because we're taking just that platform, it'll just happen, it's just this, it's just that. But where's your endeavor? You understand? So therefore, you are projecting onto liberation that it's great. You say it's great. The acharyas say it's hell. Right? But because you think it's great, and if you're attracted to liberation, if by chanting Hare Krishna you get liberation, therefore you'll chant, then better we don't call it hell. But it's at least a less annoying hell than this hell. Does that make sense? In other words, the holy name is special. Even if you think liberation is special, the holy name is unlimitedly more special than that. That's why the example is given. You know? The happiness in the material world, all of it is like one drop compared to the ocean of happiness of Brahmananda. But the Brahmananda is just a fraction of a portion of a drop for an unlimited, shoreless ocean. Right? The one of Brahmananda, there's shore, it's big. But it's not unlimited. Because just the soul being on the platform of just the soul, that's the natural platform of liberation. Prema is what's beyond that. That's his potential. His potential is prema. Just being liberated, that's just normal day-to-day stuff. Being conditioned, now that's a problem. So from conditioned state, we think liberation is special. No, it's not special, it's ordinary. You know what I'm saying? The rich person, when they travel, they stay in a 5-star hotel. It's normal for them. It's not special. It's just normal. You know? That makes sense. They drive around in a limo. That's just normal for them. Does that make sense? So therefore, for the soul, liberation is just normal. It's nothing special. But from the material viewpoint, it looks special. Is that okay? Yes.
So everybody that, every soul that becomes liberated eventually, except the demons that get killed by Krishna, has to come back to the material.
Yes. Well, the demons that are killed by Krishna, they have a choice. They might come back, but they might go to the spiritual world. But the acharyas don't recommend it as a process. Don't think, I'll become the biggest demon, I'll be killed by Krishna, and then from there I'll go back to God. That's, it's not.
Is there any, like in the Bhagavad Gita, it describes how there's a glimpse of what kind of birth they have, and then there's a glimpse of what kind of birth might take after you've done devotional service unsuccessfully, or you've been very pious. So for the liberated soul who has to come back to the material world,
I would expect, well, I mean, the first is grass. I mean, the stuff that grows out of the sidewalk, not the ones with all the leaves. Right? That's the first part. Then after that, then from grass, then they enter into the human form. So most likely they would be in the pious because they don't have any conditioning. Right? But they have the desire to control and enjoy. That's why they come back. Right? Does that make sense? Liberated means still the desire to control, the false ego of I'm the controller and enjoyer remains. Only in devotional service can remove that. That's why you can get into the spiritual world. Does that make sense? So then after that, they would take birth in a pious family. You know, that would be that, you know, that position could function from. Like that.
Isn't there a difference between getting there through Gyan or getting there through chanting the holy name, and how they will, what condition they'll come to, and when they take
it's just a matter of if they're, you know, the bhakti sukriti. Just may there'll be more or less of it. That's all. But the point is, until bhakti sukriti grows to a certain amount, then you don't develop faith. So then, still there'll be no shraddha. But the point is, like you said before, it's always something connected to devotional service that puts you in those positions anyway. It's just a matter of how much bhakti sukriti is there. Yes?
Sometimes it's said that the devotee don't strive for liberation. And certainly that liberation
The devotees don't strive for liberation. Yeah, it means they definitely don't strive for kaivalya. Okay? Kaivalya? Yeah, okay. Because I was going to say it's a devotee named Craig Baldwin. So, they don't strive for that, but many times devotees may be thinking, by chanting I get purified, I'll be free from material contamination. But that kind of thinking goes on in Nama Bas. In Shuddhanam, one doesn't worry about that. One's only worried about Krishna, pleasing Krishna. So in the Namabhava stage, there'll be a worry about that, but it's not Kaivalya. It's just being freed from the material energy. Because the suffering is there, they want to be freed from the suffering. So Shuddha Nam, one doesn't worry about that. Because the point is whatever situation you're in, the only benefit of it is if you're remembering Krishna. So even if I'm in not a nice situation, not remembering Krishna, it's still not good. The soul is still not satisfied. But if I'm remembering Krishna, I'm satisfied. So it's not the getting out of a bad situation that's important, it's remembering Krishna that's important.
This also connects to the point you made yesterday in class, that it's not the ingredients, but actually remembering Krishna.
Yeah, it's not the ingredients, it's remembering Krishna, but the point is that for rasa, the ingredients must be there. You know, but you have to know what's primary, what's secondary. Right? Means if they can't understand it all, then you just say, it's not important at all. But then the problem is then they have the knowledge, but now because you've gone against the cultural, the religious element of it, then they'll drop that. So they have the knowledge. That's what devotees many times will do, is that I know that material activities aren't important, but I'm defining material activity as the mechanics of it, not that I'm doing the mechanics for myself. But if I do the mechanics for Krishna, that's devotion. That's what the acharyas are talking about. So we'll say, this is contradictory. But they're not addressing the mechanics. Right? It's Prabhupada, when he gives examples, he's not addressing cooking or going to the market. He's addressing the consciousness of which is done. So that's why he says the devotee is going to the market, the karmi is going to the market, the devotee is cooking, the karmi is cooking. So mechanically it looks the same, but on consciousness it's a world of difference. That's the thing. So we have to be able to understand there's spiritual consciousness, right, and spiritual activity. There's just spiritual consciousness. And then there's material activity. Right? Does that make sense? So you have activity without devotion, you have activity with devotion. So the mechanics of the activity is the same. What changes is the consciousness. But just switching it to something spiritual is not enough, because spiritual is just an environment. But devotion is what you do in the environment. That's why it says devotional service, not devotional situation. Yes, by chanting Hare Krishna, we'll gain devotional situation. We never say that. You say devotional service. Because it's the service that's actually the expression. Right? In other words, if you have the Krishna and you have his internal potency, it's complete. But unless there's interaction, how is that taste? Where's rasa? In other words, in tattva, we're just describing one and the other. But in rasa, there has to be interaction. Therefore, the abhideya, the activity, is the most important. You know, but we'll think situation is the most important, because situation is what's feminine. Right? The quality of it, that's what's masculine. You know, so we just take that for, oh yeah, but this is what you have to worry about. If the situation's right, then you can get that. But we're not actually even focused on that. We're just focused on the situation. So therefore, we think the spiritual situation, like this here, is like liberation, will be something special. No, it's what you do with it that makes it special. That I'm sitting in a place, let's say I go to, a nice restaurant, but I just sit there. What's the benefit? You know? Does that make sense? So if you go to, if you're involved in a situation but you don't interact, what's the meaning? Right? Just on a practical. Just sometimes something goes wrong, right? The husband, the man and woman, I would have used husband and wife, but you know, that's more traditional. Right? So the man and woman are together. Something's gone wrong. Right? Either he's done something stupid or someone else has done something stupid, right? Does that make sense? There isn't a third option. Don't even think about it. Don't even think, go there. Like that. If there is a third option, then she will say. No one else has the right to say. Okay? So one of those two. Now, sometimes you just sit there. Okay. It means first you try, but you just sit there. Okay, well, how, you know, just let it, you know, sit. You know? Now, if she's Swedish, it might work. But if she's not, then then the point is you're doing nothing. So you're just existing. So the masculine principle is just existence. The feminine principle is the experience gained from activity. So therefore, she's still not happy because you're not doing anything. That you momentarily stop to be able to figure out what's the situation, so then what you could do. You get that leeway. But if after a few moments you don't start doing something or saying something, you're in trouble. But I was doing nothing. No, you're in trouble. But you did something, you were in trouble. You know, so what is, you know, like that? You know, you understand? It's a science. It works on all levels. So just the arrangement's not enough. You have to do something with the arrangement. Guys, just if they have stuff, okay, yeah, cool. But women, unless you're doing something with it, what's the use of it? You know what I'm saying? Because it generates an experience. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. Is that's why we think situations are important. Because it's working within the situation, you get an experience. So the point is whatever the situation, you engage it in Krishna's service so that the result is for Krishna's pleasure. That's the experience, Krishna's pleasure. And if he's pleased, you'll be pleased. Is that the sense? Yeah. Yes.
You're saying mechanics will be the same, consciousness yes. is different. It seems in some cases when your consciousness is different, mechanics will improve. Because
that's all. That'll improve even on the material platform. As you become more refined, you improve the quality of ingredients. You know what I'm saying? The person who's really into cooking and, you know, stuff like that, he'll use better ingredients than the person who really doesn't care.
So how does that relate to bhakti? Because in a certain consciousness, perhaps, we're not going to do something as well as we could in a higher consciousness, but we'll do them both with devotion. But one could say, well, actually, if you had more devotion, you would have done it better. You would have chosen different ingredients.
Yeah, so that's why Shastra is there, so you know what to choose. Because otherwise, from one's own conditioning, one may not have a clue. You know, you pick a little better within yours, okay? You know, it means, okay, the can of beans that I'm, you know, going to microwave now is not, I carefully chose that it didn't have a dent in it, right? Because my mommy said if it has a dent, there might be a hole, so it might go bad. So my can doesn't have a dent in it. But my friend, he couldn't care less. It's one of the first ones there, he just grabs it. Like that. Like that. So therefore, I am, according to my conditioning, using higher level of ingredient. Right? And so now if I'm doing that just because mommy said, okay, nice, right? At least you're accepting authority and all that. There's some benefit. If I'm doing it because I want to offer it to Krishna, and so therefore I use the best, then that now you're getting actually spiritual benefit. The other one, you know, that conscious, that'll be pious. Not the can of beans. It means that you're following authority.
Is that, I'm still using the can of beans.
Yeah, so that's why there's tradition. That's why tradition is there. You know, that really bad word. It's because tradition is what actually works. Something only becomes a tradition because it works. Right? So therefore we look at what worked, but it's whose tradition. So it's the tradition of the great sages. They follow the Veda. They understand the Veda. So they live a lifestyle based on that Veda. And they discuss the Veda in connection with the lifestyle. That's called Smriti. So therefore, what's given by the Acharyas, that's the tradition that we follow. Because then we know how to look at it, how to improve it. But at the same time, it's whatever is, you know, of a nice quality of within your social sphere, then that's also offered to Krishna, because that's the best of what you have to offer. It also gives that local, regional, variety. But then there's what Krishna likes. You know, it's just like every day you eat your regular meal and all that, but it's fun sometimes to go out for a snack, you know, out on the street, you know. It's just some fun. So these other things are fun, but not as a normal. So as you become purified and it's more about Krishna, then you'll look at what pleases Krishna rather than just what pleases yourself. You know, but you have to be practical. It has to be what's locally available. You know, in other words, using local ingredients, you offer that to Krishna. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Let's say I can make cheesecake or I can make rasgulla. I'm really good at making cheesecake. I'm not very good at making rasgulla. But I know Krishna likes rasgulla. What should I do?
Make the cheesecake and practice making rasgulla. Like that. But then the idea is that to just, that's good enough. But the point is, it's cheesecake, but what kind of cheesecake? I'm saying, you can, there is variety within that. There is qualities within that, qualities of ingredients. So the point is the best you know is what you have to do. So if you're better at making cheesecake, but you kind of just make a ho-hum cheesecake, then that's still not good enough. You know, the point is Krishna is interested in the bhakti in which it's done. So if you're thinking Krishna will get a better result, I'll make the cheesecake, and so I will do very nicely that cheesecake with focus and attention, then that's better. But if it's that you can make the cheesecake without even thinking, then the rasgulla might be better because you have to actually stop and think and actually try to be sincere. You know. So in other words, it's all about the consciousness. The other thing is just what situation will make for the best consciousness. So if you're thinking, I'm wearing these clothes because this is what Krishna wears in the spiritual world, so then that's an improvement in consciousness. But just to say, well, this is practical for doing, you know, things in the material world, where's the consciousness? If I'm having to do this for Krishna, and by wearing these clothes it'll go better for Krishna, then it has some meaning. But that half of the sentence is, I've never heard come out of anybody's mouth. Right? It's just all about being practical, as if being practical in the material world is actually has some value. It does within the material world, but spiritually it doesn't. You know what I'm saying? So there has to be that connection. So the whole point is what will connect it better? By, in other words, the person's just met devotees, and whatever you do, offering, whatever you do, eat or that, offer it to Krishna, they go home, and whatever they're making, they offer it to Krishna. That they're making benefit. Even though what they're offering, how they're cooking may not be ideal. But by sadhu sangha, then they'll start to learn. So it's not a matter of, oh, that's all nonsense, then well, I don't know how to do, so then I don't do anything, so either I can't do the process or... So that kind of thing is useless. But you have to know how to gauge it because not up to the standard is still not up to the standard, but not up to the standard done for Krishna is better than something done not for Krishna.
What about another scenario where you like something, like bake, let's say you like bake.
One thing is when you were being practical there, how many people know how to cook cheesecake? I've been around the world. Not very many. You know what I'm saying? So
I guess I hang around with people who know how to make cheesecake.
They'd have to give me their contacts. Okay, so go ahead.
I like Beethoven. Well, why do you like Beethoven? So I see Krishna's ability in Beethoven. So I'm sitting around listening to Beethoven. And
That's there. But it doesn't mean you have the Krishna conscious element, but because of the mix, you will get the effect of that kind of music. Eventually that music will drive you nuts. Look at the musicians who wrote it.
But what if it doesn't drive me nuts? Something wrong with me?
There's a very direct answer, but... So of course one won't notice. Fish don't notice the water, right? You know, the point is, but then that will be very much a conditioning, because then you should be able to appreciate it in any music that actually is able to bring all the... But why is it working? Why is it there? Why would it work? Why would you be able to see Krishna there? Because Krishna is the superior quality. So why would the superior qualities be able to manifest? It's because there's certain laws of music that are given by God, and he's touching on some of those. Right? So therefore it's giving something more than others here. But compared to what's going on in the spiritual world, when they're sitting around playing in that, you know, for Krishna music, then there's no comparison of what, you know, there's like an ocean. Here it's just, you know, something a little different. So that's because the techniques used are limited in how much of that Krishna-ness can be manifest. So that's why certain ones, they do more, right? They get more. Someone else, less. You know. Like Bach, some of the elements of that are closer to how the Samaveda works. So technically, you should be able to get experience more of that from Bach than from Beethoven. But the question is your conditioning, whether you can appreciate Bach or Beethoven. You know, and some, you know, it's other things. I don't know if anybody sees it in Tchaikovsky, but, you know. You know, it's all just discordant, weirdo stuff, you know. So I'm sure Yamadude is like
bent out of shape.
You know, like then it's like, you know, then they can really edit. That's my, what do you call it? My tune, my rag here.
So let's say someone does like Tchaikovsky, and I say,
the point is okay, but you can go on and on and on. See, in other words, let's just step back and look at the general scenario. See, is you have a principle. So now there's two things you can. That means a few things you can do. The one is that you can look at it and you can see where one could possibly, by certain aspects of application of logic, find a fault. And then go after that. And if that one doesn't work, we'll find a more absurd. And we'll just keep going until it just really gets out there. You know, you're saying, you know, for Tchaikovsky, then we'll be doing some, you know, some kind of, you know, death metal kind of thing where they're just sitting there and it's just total, you know, just grungy 10,000 watts or something. Well, actually, they never get enough together to get 10,000 watts like that. Well, you have to be a big band for 10,000. So a little bit less, right? And so like that. But it is a small hall, so you kind of get the same effect. So then, but the point is, you just keep going in that, and you know. But the point is eventually it gets down that you have a bug, and it makes a sound. To it, it's music. Like the donkey, the donkeys think they're singing poetry. They sincerely think this is poetry, and they're singing nice. So they never can understand why people come and, you know, hit them with sticks and yell and scream, because to them it is poetry, sincerely, like that. So that's the difficulty, is it keep going. But the other one is, okay, this is here. I see that there could be some. So how to practically apply that in a practical situation in my life? That would be that. That's the other, because the one shows intelligence, but it becomes much better, more usefully applied if you see. Okay, well, how would that be applied into the thing? You understand? Because then you would take the Beethoven and keep going with that. You wouldn't have gone with Tchaikovsky. Therefore, you're using this.
Tchaikovsky for my alarm. So it's so disturbing it wakes me up.
Okay.
That's true.
Yeah, could. Why not? But then, you know, you might be grumpy, and then if you're grumpy and then you say the wrong thing and then your wife gets upset, then your day's ruined. You know, say, point is if it's connected to Krishna, it works. The point is devotees will come up with these kind of examples, but so you can connect anything. Yes, but the point is Krishna makes it clear, if you don't connect it, it's not connected. But this discussion is, the holy name is the Lord, so even they don't even know it's connected, it's connected. You know what I'm saying? But devotees say, you know, but everything can be connected to Krishna. Yukta Vairagis, yes, so now where is the yukta? It's actual connection to Krishna. And where's the vairagya? That the result of it is not for you, it's for Krishna. That's yukta vairagya. You know? That I dress how I want, eat how I want, that's not yukta vairagya. All the karmis do that. Why that's yukta vairagya? It's yukta vairagya when I connect this to Krishna. This is what I can cook the best, so I'm cooking this for Krishna. And the result is for his pleasure. So therefore I'm conscious all the way through, like that.
So let's say you have something like heavy metal. So
right.
I'm going to create a heavy metal band, and we're going to, like, we're going to do that.
That's heavy metal?
We're going to scream, or, you know.
Okay. I get the idea.
Yeah. You're all idiots.
Yeah, okay, so that's getting better. You're getting close to that. You're getting close.
If you don't chant, I'll kill you.
No, if you don't chant, you're already dead.
So the modes are so low. So I'm connecting it to Krishna. But it would seem that the modes are so low that that connection is hardly even experienced. It's just
but on their level of consciousness, it's experienced. So the point is that's where they start from. See, the problem is not where you start from. It's whether you're progressing. So if you start, that's the point, is that Krishna at any point can be connected there. But you have to be able to see the higher principle. So it's the connection to Krishna that's important. So then naturally there'll be a development through that. Does that make sense?
So I started this band after I'd been a devotee 30 years.
Okay.
Problem?
I would say not having practiced for 30 years, it's not going to be that good. You know, of course, if you're going with a traditional garage band, it might work. As long as all that's listening is, you know, those boxes on the shelves and stuff like that. You know, until your mom gets home, of course, then you got to stop, right? You start a band, yeah, I mean, if that's what you want to do, but the point is you could do so much more. You'll reach so much more people directly, you know, without the band. You know what I'm saying? Some people do, but the point is, I mean, the only music scene I ever saw that a lot of people joined from it was Straight Edge. But Straight Edge meant you had to follow the regulative principles. All the other ones, it's like the more you break them, the better. You know, they don't join. Not en masse, but the Straight Edge, they joined just the whole group. It's like not a problem. But don't. But you know, it's different. They're doing something more. So the point is a connection, but how much connection is there? How much is there? So if that's all you can function at, great. Better you have a band that's singing about Krishna than after 30 years you make a band that doesn't sing about Krishna. You know? But the point is the amount of people you'll get coming to your band, you can get that, you know, coming to the, you know, temple program. You know? I mean, I remember going to one Straight Edge band program, devotee band, like that. And, how many people are here is about all that was there, you know? And for them, it's a good turnout today, you know? You know, it's just, that's the way these alt scenes, that's the way it is. It's pretty, pretty low key. So it's, if one starting there, great. But one doesn't go back to that. You know, just like Prabhupada said, new age for a karmi is actually a step up. It's more subtle, there's more understanding and metaphysical things that are beyond their control within the universe, the uniformity of things within the universe. But for a devotee to step back to new age, that's a step down. Right? You know, so to go from anamoy to pranamoy, you know, it's a little better. But to go from anandamoy down to pranamoy, that's not so good. But better whatever position if it's connected to Krishna. But the point is, the connection is what's good. So as each time he goes to put on those shoes, he thinks about Krishna and how they'll be used for Krishna. Why did he choose them connected to Krishna? You know what I'm saying? He only does it in the argument with you. When you say, you know, when he's arguing about, you know, why do we have to wear devotional clothes? That's the only time he'll say there's a connection. But in his actual life, he'll never connect it. You know? He'll say about his house, his car, his lifestyle. He'll say all that for argument's sake. So that means he has the knowledge to do it, but there's no realization to do it. Otherwise, he'd be doing it. So that's the difference. Value means you do it. Knowledge means you have it, but you don't do it. Every smoker knows it's bad to smoke. It's right on the pack, right? But they don't have the realization. The ones that have realization aren't smoking. Right? So that's the thing, is having knowledge is not enough. You have to apply it. So that's what we're saying, the practical. So if we get down to, okay, someone's at this position, so what is there, so that we can see is whatever you position you're at, start there, connect that to Krishna. Right? And then if someone drops back from a better position, it's a drop back, but if they can keep it connected to Krishna, then they'll be gradually advanced again. The point is to be progressive. That's the idea. Does that work? Yes.
As we're advancing in Krishna consciousness, then gradually, if one can find the music, then one would try to find what is pleasing to Krishna, what kind of music he likes, and then one would learn those kinds of rock and those things, connected more and more as one.
Yeah, because the point is the raga is a mood. The raga is a mood, an expression of a particular mood. And that mood is originally within interaction with Krishna. Does that make sense? But those same moods can be followed and practiced here. So therefore the raga can apply here. You know what I'm saying? Because Shiva and Parvati, they're interacting. That's the material energy. Right? You know, so happiness is, it has that form here. But it's original, that raga is originally the happiness in the spiritual world. So if you connect it, you get that. If you don't connect it, you get this. Okay. Yeah. So end here. We're over time.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanand Jai
Gaura Premanand